Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 45 of season 8 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we FUBAR our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off the week is DJ Valentine of Simplistic Reviews. Welcome back to the show, DJ.
Who has a message for Germany? Oh, that's a different. That's Inglourious Basterds. I'm sorry. I'm. Thank you for having me back. glad to be here. Good to be here. Saving Private Ryan. Epic, epic, epic movie.
Absolutely. Especially when when you keep remembering things, like it feels like deja vu.
Don't look. I haven't seen it yet. All right. You've only given me 24 hours. Give me some time. Damn it. Leave it alone, Tony Scott's Ghost. I'm going to watch it. Jeez. I'm going to see it.
I'm looking forward to hearing what you think of it when you eventually do find time to see
it. I'm probably going to watch it and be like,
huh. You might. It is possible.
Or it's going to blow my mind. I'm going to be like, this is the greatest film. I want to see it on all my lists.
My feeling is that you're gonna say, "Oh, it's a nice idea, but they could have done it. They could have done it better." I think that's what you're gonna say.
Oh, a car that runs on garbage. It's a nice idea. That's
fine. Hey, it worked in 2015. That's right. It works for Doc Brown. There you go.
It's Doc Brown, man.
So minute 45 begins with Ryben retorting. And ends with Upham moving along with everyone else. So, we've been talking the last few days about this little debate that's been going on between the various characters, trying to figure out, what's their purpose here and, what's their purpose in their journey right now and possibly what's their purpose in the world. So we got Jackson's interpretation that his purpose in the world might be to, be the sniper who takes out Adolf Hitler. It's very possible. And so yesterday he told us that. Yes, completely. By saying, "Oh, that's brilliant, Bumpkin." Now, I just love the fact that he just calls him Bumpkin, Now, do you know what the term bumpkin means?
Country bumpkin. I've used it sometimes. I don't bumpkin. That's a good question. I don't know where the etymology of that would come from. No.
Okay. So first of all, a bumpkin is like a yokel. Right.
No,
it's
I know what it is.
It's a foolish, poorly educated person from a rural region.
So me. Is what you're saying. I'm in Miami, so I'm close to Bumpkinville. I'm like maybe 5 miles away from the country as they were.
Right. I couldn't find an actual interpretation because
you're gonna get. You got to be careful where you spell bumpkin. Or you're gonna get some very disgusting stuff.
probably. Do you know any other synonyms for the term country bumpkin?
I'm going through all my Smokey and the Bandit references in my brain that I can say aloud. Bumpkin is pretty much seals it. Redneck is kind of like the main, which I know redneck is like came from farmers and stuff like that. But that's like the main one that pops in my brain.
Okay, so that's there. So basically, the different synonyms are hayseed, chaw bacon.
Hayseed, like I said.
That's right.
Chaw bacon. Ooh, I'm writing that down.
Rube.
Rube is good. Yeah. Redneck, of course.
Redneck.
Hillbilly, yeah.
Hillbilly.
Hick, yep, Hillbilly Hick.
And Hick.
Hillbilly Jim, great wrestler from WWF at the time.
There you go. So I actually did right now go into the Urban Dictionary to find out what they're going to say here. And the first one is completely clean and works well. So a bumpkin is an unsophisticated person, not very intelligent or interested in culture, generally refers to someone living in a rural area. The term bumpkin is a derivative of the word bum, the rear end. It may come from either the Middle Dutch word bumpkin, or a little barrel, or the Flemish word boomkin, which is a shrub. Such a person may easily have been compared to a block of wood.
Again, me. Essentially.
So, okay, it's
a big dumb stump is what you're telling me.
So you're a block of wood. Is that rock. What you're telling me?
SAT score says, you know, they didn't give me a number. They said bumpkin, and it just came. Florida school system is really rough. Let's put it out
there. Apparently. So the term itself, bumpkin, is. I found other places where it's being used, not necessarily as a country bumpkin. First of all, there's a place called the Bumpkin Island in Boston Harbor in Massachusetts. It's also known as Round Island, Bumpkin Island, or Bumpkin Island, or Ward's Island. It has an elevation of 70 feet above sea level. And in 1902, a man named Albert Burrage, a Boston philanthropist, and for children with physical disabilities. And during World War I, the island was used by the U.S. Navy. And then the hospital ended up closing during World War II. And there was a fire and it burned down in 1945.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow.
So there you have a bumpkin island. Now, there is also a song called Country Bumpkin. By Cal Smith in 1974, which the song was actually written by Don Wayne.
Don Wayne?
And, you know, Don Wayne.
No relation to John Wayne, would you say?
Probably not. And it was released as the first single and title track on the album Country Bumpkin.
Okay.
It actually. Shot to number one on the U.S. Hot Country Songs Billboard in 1974. And it only stayed number one for 1 week, but it spent 10 weeks on the country charts. So I actually even have the lyrics of the song if you're interested.
Oh, God, here we go. Here we go, folks. Sit down, buckle up. We're gonna get some Rob Country tunes. Let's do it.
Yeah, but I do it without any musical background, thankfully.
But just put some twang.
He walked
in your
into
voice.
The bar.
Put some twang in it. Put some twang in it. You
know? Nah, nope, not gonna happen. He walked into the bar and parked his lanky frame upon a tall bar stool, and with a long, soft Southern drawl, said, "I'll just have a glass of anything that's cool." A barroom girl with hard and knowing eyes, slowly looked him up and down, and she thought, "I wonder how on earth that country bumpkin found his way to town." She said, "Hello, country bumpkin. How's the frost out on the pumpkin? I've seen some sights, but man, you're something. Where'd you come from, country bumpkin?" It was just a short year later, in a bed of joy-filled tears, yet death-like pain, and to this wondrous world of many wonders, one more wonder came. The same woman's face was wrapped up in a raptured look of love and tenderness, as she marveled at the soft and warm and cuddly boy child feeding at her breast. And she said, "Hello, country bumpkin, fresh as frost out of the pumpkin. I've seen some sights, but babe, you're something. Mama loves her country bumpkin. 40 years of hard work later, in a simple, quiet, and peaceful country place, the heavy hand of time had not erased the raptured wonder from the woman's face. She was lying on her deathbed, knowing fully well her race was nearly run. But she softened. The frost is gone now from the pumpkin. I've seen some sights and life's been now from the pumpkin. I've seen some sights and life's been something. See you later, country bumpkin." That is a terrible, terrible song.
What are you talking about? It's like the acid episode of Rick and Morty, where you see the entire life of a whole relationship play out to you. I don't know what I'm talking about. This sounds like horrible, horrible music.
Yeah. Now we know why it only makes the top one.
Yeah, you rhyme bump bumpkin with a something, which is it's risky. give you props on the daring.
Well, again, I didn't do it, so you know, I don't take credit for that. Yeah. So apparently, Ryben thinks that Jackson's a bumpkin. Mm.
And Jackson doesn't retort or respond, mainly because he's probably called them that a million times.
That's true. And then Ryben then turns back to Miller and goes, "So, Captain, what about you? I mean, you don't grape at all?" He goes, "I don't grape to you, Ryben. I'm a captain. There's a chain of command. Grapes go up, not down. Always up. You grape to me. I grape to my superior officers, so on and so on and so on. I don't grape to you. I don't grape in front of you. You should know that as a ranger. I'm sorry, sir, but let's say you weren't a captain, or maybe I was a major. What would you say then?" He goes, "Well, in that case, I'd say this is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective, sir, worthy of my best efforts, sir. Moreover, I feel heartfelt sorrow for the mother of Private James Ryan, and I'm willing to lay down my life and the lives of my men, especially you, Ryben, to ease her suffering."
I like this because Ryben just wants him to bitch. And he goes, "Well, maybe he'll just in this exercise, I'll pretend to be a major," not thinking you're not allowed to. You can gripe, but you have to gripe in the most respectful manner possible. Again, we talked about this all week. Things I've taken from Captain Miller in my daily life of, you know, being a supervisor and stuff like that. This is a conversation I've had where we're doing something because we're having like some kind of inspection or visit or something. And the staff members around me will talk, and I'm like, "Why are we doing this?" And I'm like, "Hey, man, I can't say I want to do it, but the attitude I give them is kind of like, you know, if I talk to the boss, I'm gonna be like, "Yeah, it's great, fantastic, good job." You know, this is the conversation I've had where you're not allowed to just say, "Yeah, major, this job sucks. Why is this horrible?" You can't, because of the chain of command he brought up. You said, "Oh, I'm a major. Oh, you're a major. Oh, then I can't." And I love the shot of Tom Sizemore just chuckling because he knows
you
can't just say, "Sir, this is a horrible mission," and da, 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 da. The only people that kind of get to gripe correctly is like the grunts, but the captains kind of have to eat as it were, essentially, to complete the mission.
Exactly. Now, what I found really funny, and I mentioned this earlier in the week, that I was going to bring up the script again,
right?
There's something cut out from the script between the conversation between Colonel Anderson and Miller. Colonel Anderson, played by Dennis Farina, and it's exactly this scenario.
Mm.
So I'm just going to read through it because I think it just fits in really well here. Obviously, it takes place prior to the scene in the movie or in the script.
Right.
So Anderson then says to him, "Where are your men now?" He is pinned down a mile east of here, waiting for some help from the Navy guns. I'm sending Simpson to take over for you. The division is going to Khan. You're not coming with us. I have something else for you, sir. There's a Private James Ryan who parachuted in with the 101st near Rommel. I want you to take a squad up there. If he's alive, bring him back to the beach for debarkation. Take whoever you need. You've got your pick of the company. A private, sir? He's the last of four brothers. The other three were killed in action. This is straight from the chief of staff. But, sir, I spit it out, Captain. Miller hesitates. Then he says, "Respectfully, sir, sending men all the way up to Rommel to save a sense." "Sir." The other officers freeze, listening without turning. Colonel Anderson glares at Miller. "You think just because you hold a Congressional Medal of Honor, you can say any damn thing you please to your superior officers?" Miller considers the question, then smiles. "Yes, sir, more or less." Colonel Anderson looks as if he's about to bite Miller's head off. Then he smiles, too. "All right. I'll give you that. Continue." Miller, "The numbers don't make sense, sir. His brothers are dead. That's too bad. But they're out of the equation. Sending men up there is bleeding heart crapola,
yeah.
From 3,000 miles away. One private is simply not worth a squad. This one is. He's worth a lot more than that, which is why I'm sending you. You're the best field officer there is." Miller shrugs. "Yes and no, sir. What about Morgan? Fine officer, regular churchgoer, writes poetry. He might like a mission like this. And he's taller than me." Colonel Anderson listens with amused tolerance, but it's time to get back to business. "That's enough, Captain. You have your orders. Major Thomas will fill you in. Miller knows when to back off. He salutes. Yes, sir. Miller and Colonel Anderson exchange a private letter. Miller joins Major Thomas at one of the small map tables. Colonel Anderson watches Miller for an instant, then notices the other officers in the tent watching, and they go back to work. So, again, obviously, I understand why they cut this from the movie. It's not needed at all.
It's very scripty. It sounds good on the page, but shooting it would be like it's
no, but it's also stuff that's repeated numerous other times in the movie. I mean, that's why it's not needed.
I just thought
it's very interesting the fact that later on the script he says, "I only, you know, you can only grape up," but they had, you know, in the script they already give us that point that he's also graping to his commander, you know, that he shouldn't be doing it. So I like the way that they. I mean, I like the connection there, you know, even though it isn't necessary for the movie.
There are parts in it, and sometimes when you're writing or shooting or doing anything, you got to kill your babies, as they say. And like, there's some lines in there, like, oh, that's a cool line, but you don't need, like you're saying, you don't need it. So even that cold line, and he's taller than me, I like that. But for that scene to happen, you're wasting time. You got to get the pacing going in terms of the story. So yeah.
The tag end of this minute after, you know, Miller gives the response to Ryben. So we get a quick shot of Mellicent and Caparzo, where they look at each other and he goes, "He's good." And then Caparzo goes, "I love him." And did you notice what the two of them do at that point?
I know he blows a kiss to him, Vin Diesel.
That's right.
Right.
They both make kissing sounds as they're doing it. You know, so it's just it's fun. Again, it's a nice little moment to once again show us the connection between these characters.
Right.
You know, how much they've been through and why they work so well together.
And they respect. It shows the respect through they disrespect. When I say disrespect, but like they feel free to talk in front of him, but it's not out of disrespect of him. Because he holds back parts of himself, the men are kind of captivated by him, which means when he speaks, there isn't someone questioning his experience because they don't know what it is. So they kind of respect him. So, but the way if you're like walking in, like, hey, these guys just have kind of. So if he tells them, I mean, later on, they does get kind of heated in between everybody, but that's like after death. But in terms of the way their unit works or their squad works, it's like they respect the guy, even though they talk anyway in front of him. It's just funny. I do like it's like, again, a teacher situation where you respect the teacher, but if we've all had that good teacher where you can talk like a person in front of them, not like, you know, you're dealing with, that's kind of how they all act.
Right. And then we get a quick shot of Upham trying to catch up with everyone else. And that's the way this minute ends. Was there anything else you wanted to say about this minute or about the movie in general?
No, it was great. Great film. A great segment of the movie. I'm just thinking back of when I've used that speech. I think it was in 2004. I was counseling children at the YMCA. And we had to make them do this homework assignment or something like that for scores for the Y. And I remember a kid like, "Why do we got to do this?" And I kind of gave him an explanation in the manner in which Miller would give us, like, "Yeah, you got to do this and do this." Because I like Miller because he doesn't lie to him. He tells him the truth. He holds back some of himself, but he doesn't lie about the mission. He doesn't even hide the manner in which he does not like the mission. Which any other captain would. I just love that the way they act together in this scene, and it does break down later, but it's kind of like a family fight, not a horrible disrespect kind of fight. So yeah, this movie's just good. It's just good. It's good writing.
Okay, but I mean, going back to what you just said, I do think that Miller is still keeping somewhat of a distance with the other men. And
yeah.
He's not outright saying to them that this is a bad mission.
No, he's not. But it's if I'm Ryben and I'm hearing Miller talk, Because even later, he goes, "I don't, Ryan, I don't care." He doesn't. It's not about. He's not outright saying it's a that Ryben is wrong. That's why I think they kind of like not like him, but let's respect him in terms of he's not telling them that this is the right thing to do and we must do it. He's not doing that. He's just like, this is our orders. We got to follow our orders. The right. Mission, my it's a stupid mission, and you're right to say this is a dumb piece of mission, but it's our orders and we got to follow them. I mean, because if we don't follow them, then what the hell? I got to get home to my wife. that's all. If you watch Tom Hanks' face, in my mind, it's a big cue card that's on his head. I got to get home to my wife. Especially because Farina keeps telling him, it's like, oh, yeah, this, he kind of hints at the, you know, you do this and you, you know, whatever. But later on, he says, I don't care about Ryan. He doesn't give a crap about Ryan. He just wants to get home to his wife. It's a whole movie for him. Anyway, but yeah.
True. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Filmmaker Friday, where my guest will give their top five DJ Valentine directed films. You know, because who wants to hear about Steven Spielberg?
Jesus, films? That hack.
Wait, Spielberg or Valentine?
But flip a coin. Flip a coin, guys. It's a double-sided one, though. We're doing top five Steven Spielberg movies, according to me, right? According to the only one that counts, right?
Yes.
Mine. It's funny because I when I was in school, I had to take a Steven Spielberg literal class direct lecture, or was Dr. Ungerreit, and he made us watch every Spielberg movie up to the point up to 1999, I guess. I think the last one was at the time Minority Report. I think it was 99. I can't remember. Yeah. Minority Report
came out in 2001.
No, I think the book he had, because he worked in Hollywood for the time, and the book he had, it had Minority Report in it, but I think it's because he knew they were working on the movie or something like that. He was aware. I still have the book somewhere, but I think the last one we physically saw was 99. I can't remember. But anyway, it's on this list. So my number five is Last Crusade. It's the greatest ending of a film trilogy of all time, greatest franchise ender of all time. The franchise just stopped after that. It was funny how they never made any more movies after Indiana Jones: The Last Crusade.
We named the dog Indiana.
I can't do Jake Lewitt's Sean Connery. It's fantastic.
Where's Jay when you need him?
Great film. I remember begging my mom to see. I know. My mom, this is one of the films my mom surprised me and took me to see. Like, we're gonna go out. Where are we going? She just drove me to a movie theater. We saw Last Crusade. It was fantastic because she knew I love Indiana Jones. And the whole thing with the opening sequence with River Phoenix is fantastic. Sean Connery as his father, you just get it, even though he's like what, 10 years older than Harrison Ford or something to that effect. So it's just great. It's a great film. Great way to end a franchise.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's stupid they didn't make any more.
And after this one, Indiana Jones never made it anymore.
Yeah,
they never made any more. It's weird. It's just weird. at number four is going to be this movie, Saving Private Ryan. I think it's his probably. It's. I think it's to me technically it's his best. It's like him. In his prime. This is Spielberg in his prime, flexing all the muscles. So, this is one he won Best Director for. How many directing Oscars does he have? I know he won for this, and I think he won two, right? It's this and is it Schindler's List as well?
It's Schindler's List, yes.
I can't remember the second one. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, this is the one where I was like, okay, this is the second one, yeah. This was fantastic. I love this film. It's fantastic. I watch it in short doses. Again, like I told you before last week, beginning of the week, I don't like burning it out. I like using it on special occasions or make the prime for me is making somebody see it who hasn't seen it. Like, oh, you haven't seen it. You watch this.
Wait, didn't you say that once before? It sounds like deja vu or something.
Yeah, well, shut up. I'm not saying deja vu yet. I did that. I do that for certain movies. When I love watching people watch a movie that I love for the first, like watching them. Like I did that this week for Dread. Somebody I knew never saw Dread, so I was like, watch this. What, you think you've seen a war movie? I'm gonna show you a war movie. So yeah, Saving Private Ryan, number four. Number three, again, Mr. Clue, I'm apologizing, but I'm putting Jurassic Park here. Jurassic Park. It's a meme at this point. People say, oh, the effects still hold up today. They do. It's creepy.
Surprisingly, Jay has it higher than this.
It's weird. I figured it would be on his list. No, this is like Jay Clue. This is his. If it was a church, he would be at the church of Jurassic Park. It's a fantastic film. And it's got Jeff Goldblum in it, who's, you know, that's catnip for me. And it's a fantastic movie. It's fun. It's just fun. And again, it should have just been the end. It should have just been one movie and done. I know Clue would hate that. But
I agree with you on that.
From there. Though I like, and Jay knows I like the second one a lot, mainly because I love Jeff Goldblum. But after the second one, you're kind of just tarnishing it. Anyway, Jurassic Park's fantastic. Steven Spielberg is, you know, the man. The first blockbuster ever is Jaws. And Jaws is my number two. I had a carpet in my old room. We call it a Florida room, I guess. It's kind of like a patio with a roof. And after I saw Jaws, I was very young. I think I was six, five. I would not go to the beach or a pool. I would not go in that room because anything that looked like water freaked me the hell out. Okay. Oh, wow. Shaw dying in that movie effed me up. That's nightmare fuel for me. That whole thing. I'll never wear a life jacket again. That's the shark. No. But in terms of its importance, Jaws is on this list. It's a fantastic, fantastic, fantastic movie. Find somebody who's never seen Jaws before, and 5 minutes in, they'll be like, eh, and near the end, it's gonna get you. It's gonna pull you in. It's one of those movies where the youth will be like, yeah, this is a little movie, and by the end they're like, holy crap! It's fantastic. But number one, easily by a mile. Like if you say Spielberg to me, it's Raiders of the Lost Ark. It is a perfect movie. Perfect. There is no flaw in the film. I know the Big Bang Theory had some joke about.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah. That's not a flaw to me. That's not a flaw. The fact that Indiana Jones cannot be in the movie and everything works out the exact same way. That's the joke or whatever. That doesn't make the movie a flaw. that character. You understand? They invented a character fresh. Who's iconic, who is up there with the greats, who is essentially, The Last Crusade proved, the descendant of James Bond. You know, it's fantastic. And the way Spielberg shot it, this is where you're like, oh, this guy. No, and I remember reading something, I think it was Michael Bay said something like, I think he was made of been a, I gotta look this up. He might have been a production designer or like one of the people who were working on the movie. Like he was like nothing. He didn't do anything. Like he was just one of those guys. And he thought the movie was gonna bomb or something. Like this movie looks like, you know, it's like, I think he's on record talking about it. Like he did not think it was gonna do well. So I think he was either working on it or working near it or something like that. It's a perfect movie. And I remember Dr. Unger, right, he showed it to us and he's like, there's not one I remember him saying, there's not one frame of this movie that's wrong. Everything in this movie. Oh, wow. And he would swear by it and stuff like that. But yeah, it's a perfect film. The snakes, if I'm ascribing Raiders of the Lost Ark to you, something's wrong with you. you have to I sat my sister down and made her watch it because she's younger, she was into Tomb Raider. I was like, you know what Tomb Raider is? It's a rip off of this. It's a horror. No, I love Tomb Raider. It's fine. Lara Croft, you're fine. But there is no Lara Croft. There's no Nathan Drake without Indiana Jones. It's crazy how they only made three of them. It's just crazy that they only made three of them. It's fantastically weird how they made three of these movies.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, DJ. Would you like for one final time this season? To tell people where they can find DJ Valentine.
Simplistic.reviews is a website where we host our podcast, Simplistic Reviews Podcast. Me, Matthew Stewart, Justin Polizzi. We talk about movies and television, sometimes video games, sometimes weird food that Matt puts in his body at Kentucky Fried Chicken. It's weird. It's a crazy show. We play games. And we watch a whole bunch of weird stuff on sometimes on the 20th and the 15th and the 1st of the month.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can send me an email to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on my website, movearound.com. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. And you can find me on Facebook. So, DJ, thank you very much for joining me this week. This was great. It was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed yourself.
Pleasure,
too.
My pleasure.
I mean, it feels like we're doing this again and again and again.
No, don't make a deja vu. Don't do it. I see it coming. All right, I'm gonna watch your deja vu. All right, this is supposed to be about Steven Spielberg, one of the greats. Tony Scott's also great, but Jesus, okay. I see Top Gun. Leave me alone. I saw it. Okay. I saw Revenge.
Right. Got it. I actually like
Domino.
Revenge.
I've seen that. I've seen Domino. Leave me alone.
Exactly. All right. So I will be back on Monday with a new guest. So everyone have a great weekend. And until then, earn this.
Earn this. In my solitude.